Great Expectations is one of Dickens's most popular novels. In fact, it may be his most popular novel. And there are lots of reasons for this, I think. One is the sheer fact that it's short, and therefore it tends to be read by children. It's also, of course, a novel about growing up, and it's a novel which repays being reread at different stages of people's lives. A number of people do this, and they recognise different things in it as they get older, because it's a novel about getting older and recognising what's been gained, what's been lost with age. It's also, though, I think, a popular novel because it is so oblique and so ambiguous. It seems very straightforward. It's a very simple fable about what one learns as one grows up and what one has to let go, leave behind. It's also a popular novel, I think, though, because almost every sentence in it, on the one hand, seems to be absolutely straightforward. This is the story of someone finding out what they know and what they thought they knew, and the gap between those two things. But on the other hand, almost every sentence is charged with ambiguity, with obliqueness, with that sense in which there's more to be said, there's something we're not being told. And that might be why so many later writers and other artists have responded to it. It's been rewritten in part or in whole in other novels, like Peter Carey's novel Jack Mags. It's appeared in various disguised forms in television shows like Happy Days, Twilight Zone, South Park. It's even been used in advertising. The idea of great expectations you can see in everything from dating agencies, there's one called Great Expectations Services for Singles, shops. There's a shop called Grape Expectations, which is about wine. There's a Baked Expectations, which sells cakes. There's my own favourite, Great Waxpectations, which seems to be straining it slightly, which is selling candles. And what's also interesting is the number of people who've taken over the title who seem not to have read the novel and don't recognise that Great Expectations, the title, is hugely ironic. This is a novel about what happens when your expectations exceed reality. So that's why it's so strange to read books like Great Expectations, An Interactive Guide to Your First Year of Marriage, for instance. Or there's one called Great Expectations, Your All-in-One Resource for Pregnancy and Childbirth, which you'd think would not be necessarily the best guide to life for a young child, especially given that Pip seems to have had an exceptionally unhappy childhood. And there are arguments that that's why he has such an unhappy life as an adult. In some ways, this is an extremely modern set of ideas about how far adult lives can be deformed or can be somehow frustrated simply by what happens to you when you're a child. But be that as it may, it's not just creative writers and advertisers who've responded to Great Expectations. Filmmakers, of course, have also been richly attracted to it. David Lean's famous black and white version, lit with chiaroscuro blacks and whites, really captures the sense of menace which children often feel, that sense in which adults love to think of childhood as a place of innocence, but that innocence largely being a creation of adulthood, a nostalgia for a time that never was, and children, of course, often being caught up in traumas and dangers, and a sense of the world as being a threatening, a menacing place. More recently, there's been a Hollywoodization of Great Expectations. A number of people will have seen Robert De Niro playing Magwitch in an attempt to sex up the novel for a mainstream cinema audience. But in some ways, that goes against the grain of a novel, which is very sexy, but sexy in the way that things which are oblique and seen in glimpses and just out of view are sexy. The relationship between Pip and Estella, for instance, is oddly sadomasochistic in its nature, but it's also one in which just fleeting touches of hands and little kisses and blushes carry a huge erotic charge. But as so often with Dickens, as so often with most Victorian writers, it's what we're not told and what we don't see that seems as important as what we are told and what we do see.